going to go live in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Hello, and welcome to the Flatbill Pastor Podcast. My name is Marky. And who are you?
My name is Clinton James Nolder.
Okay. Welcome to episode 6.
6
of our podcast. I can't believe we made it 6 whole months.
6 months. Once a month for 6 months.
Yep, that's what we've been doing.
We were halfway through what we promised ourselves we would do for this experimental podcast.
It is an experiment. So welcome to our experiment.
If you want the experiment to continue, then you should give us some feedback.
Yes.
Punch that subscribe button. Is there a subscribe
Smash
button?
Smash that subscribe
Smash
button.
Smash it. Turn on the notifications. Maybe there's a ding ding bell. It goes ding ding. New podcast.
Yeah.
You can do that. What else can they do? Oh, if they want us to talk about something, they can shoot us a
text message.
Text message. It's 678-661-6330. They can just text the word podcast, and then it'll respond with a form, and they just say, hey, what do you want us to talk about?
Yep.
And you can let us know, this is what I want to happen on a podcast.
Yep. So today we have formulated our topic in an interesting way. We have something very interesting to talk about.
Yes. We have asked people for, just like we just did,
yep,
on the podcast itself. We have looked on Facebook. We've asked there. We've done the YouTubes. The social media is asking for content, ideas. And we've gotten a lot of love. We've gotten a lot.
A lot.
We've gotten a lot of ideas that way. However, there was just this like recurring conversation, recurring theme that's been coming up over the last few weeks, month or so. And that's this Chat GPT. You know what I'm talking about?
Is that
what
it is?
I don't know.
I don't know the letters.
I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
Okay.
Either way, it's, I don't know what those things stand for. I probably should before I've just said this on the interwebs. But it's artificial intelligence, AI, okay, that evidently uses, I don't know, it's like locked into humans' brains all over the place. And then it computes those human brains into real intelligence.
So wait, this is like a microchip situation?
Okay, so it's artificial intelligence, so it's not actual, so it can't be actually locked into human brains, you know what I'm saying? I don't know how it works, but evidently it's like Minority Report or something. I'm just kidding.
Okay.
Honestly, I have no clue. But it's supposed to be like this robot brain that you can ask questions or ask it to do things for you, like write papers or I'll probably ask it to write my sermon for the Sunday. Oh, you know, those kind of
perfect
things.
Hey, I actually think I heard a song written by AI.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And it, like, when there's a really famous person, they have all this access to their voice. They can, like, mimic it.
How about that?
And, like, add in lyrics they would say. And
what kind
then
of song
it sounds
was it?
Like it's Sing a Drake something. Song.
Go ahead.
I absolutely don't know the song by heart, but.
Okay.
It's a Drake song. So if you've ever heard the artist Drake,
yeah,
I'm fairly certain there's an AI song out there.
Chat GPT Drake song.
Yep.
Anyway, so we just decided, you know what? Let's just see what Chat GPT, this AI, thinks that people want an answer to. So we just said, hey, what are questions that people want pastors to answer? And spit back a bunch of questions. And one of those questions we selected for today's topic of conversation. And even then, we took the question, gave it back to ChatGPT and just said, hey, give us a few questions to ask to help answer this question in depth in an interview format. And it even spit out more questions that we're going to use today.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'll let you introduce the topic that ChatGPT has given us, and we will jump right in it. And hopefully, maybe we find that there are some human brains searching for the same answers that this AI ChatGPT brain came up with.
Oh, undoubtedly.
Let's go.
There is. So today's topic, we're going to be talking about doubt. And can doubt and faith coexist?
Okay.
Because those are two very different things.
Are they?
Very opposite things, some may say.
Okay. All right.
So, I mean, you know, faith is like, the definition of faith is like, you know, you're trusting in something, like you got this like connection to something that you trust. And then doubt is like kind of the opposite of that. It's like skepticism.
Oh, yes. Yeah, no doubt. I see what you're saying now. Yes, faith and doubt, opposite ends of the spectrum, for sure. Yeah, I think that even though ChatGPT created the question and the context for like the in-depth questions we're going to kind of walk through, I do think that this is something that we've had discussions before in terms of just ministry as a whole as a church. And it seems to be something that I would think resonates with a lot of people out there. How long have you been a follower of Jesus?
I believe I was 15 when I decided that I believed who Jesus said he was.
Would you say you've had any moments of doubt in the last 12 years?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
How about that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say, so I'm a good little bit older than you are. So I've had a little more time to have some doubts.
Yes, so much older.
So much. not that much.
You said it, not me.
I didn't say it that way, though. I didn't say so much older. I just said like a good bit. So I decided to start believing in Jesus at 11. Hmm. And so I'm 39. So it's 28 years. If that's right math. And I for sure can say that I've had doubts, you know? Now that doesn't answer the question immediately, right? So can doubt and faith coexist at the same time? Well, I'm a pastor and I've had doubts. You work at a church, you've had doubts. We're both followers of Jesus. So maybe the quick answer is yes, but I think there's probably more to this question than just simply that. So why don't we dive into some of the in-depth questions and kind of see where we're at.
Okay. So this question is interesting to me because I feel like I'm very intrigued by the way that the question is formulated. How can we explain doubt and uncertainty when it comes to faith and spiritual beliefs? And how are they different from not having faith?
Yeah.
So this is kind of the first question when we think about like those two things coexisting and how polar opposites they are in our minds sometimes. So like it's kind of like yin and yang, like can they coexist? Are they still what they are if the other is present?
Right.
You know, so.
So when we look at those two definitions, that's really the question we're asking. Is doubt the same as faithlessness? And I think the key is doubt says, hey, there's some uncertainty. Hmm. Like I'm not positive. I think I'd like to know more. When we look at the Bible, there's a passage that talks about faith. It's Hebrews 11:1. Let me look it up real quick. And it says this. Well, that came up in the King James. I don't want to read in the King James. Let me scroll down to the NIV. And now I've got an ad. There we go. Now, faith is confidence in what we hope for, assurance about what we do not see. Right? So if doubt is a lack of confidence, faith is saying, hey, I got confidence in what we hope for and assurance of what we do not see.
Hmm.
I can see why people would then wonder, man, can those two things exist? Because if doubt is a lack of confidence and faith is confidence, then can those two things exist at the same time? I think that gets to the heart of why people struggle with, okay, I've been a follower of Jesus for a long time, but I'm starting to have some doubts that kind of show up in my mind. And that's causing me to question, do I actually have any faith?
So here's my thing. You don't just like, I feel like most people don't just wake up in the morning and all of a sudden they, what they believed in full confidence yesterday, they don't believe today. Like there has to be some things that happen in life for people to take a step back and think, wait, I'm realizing that I have doubts. I'm realizing that I'm uncertain about what I was absolutely certain about in the past, especially when it comes to faith. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like there's got to be, like, let's talk about some of the examples of things that people experience.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times it'll be, hey, I had an experience with some church people that claim to be Christians. Mm. And the way they treated me, or the way they neglected me, or the way they made me feel when X, Y, and Z happened. You know, I've talked to multiple single moms who just said, hey, when stuff hit the fan in her marriage, and all of a sudden she just completely was abandoned by the church, and nobody called and nobody said anything, and just felt like, you know, they were alone. And then when they went to another church to try and figure something out, and they walked in with kids without a husband, and they're like, and they just, she could just feel the stares and the eyes wondering like, oh, what did you do? And all of a sudden people, that's just one example of how, you know, sometimes Christians can treat people and assume things. And all of a sudden she's like, you know what, if all these Christians, including the pastors who are supposed to be like closest with God, if this is the way they make people feel who are going through rough times, then maybe God's not real. Mm. Or, you know, a family experiences a tragedy, you know, where an accident happens and suddenly they've lost a loved one and there's no good explanation, you know?
Yeah.
And then I called on one second, like, this person contributed good to the community and good to the world, and they were good for our family, and they held our family together, and fill in the blank of all the positive things. And why would God choose to allow that to happen to them? And if God really did love me and care for me and want to honor a promise to protect me and all those things, then obviously he feels like, hey, he's let me down here.
Mm-hmm.
Those circumstances. I think there's moments where if we're ill-equipped and suddenly we come in contact with someone who's got a little bit of education,
mm-hmm.
And can create some questions in our minds that we can't figure out ways to search for and find reasonable answers. You know, we find that a lot of times with kids that just don't have a very strong faith when they go to school.
Mm.
And suddenly, okay, well, they've got someone who's very educated, who's poking holes in what they're thinking, and they don't have the ability or to be equipped to answer those poking hole questions. Suddenly, all of a sudden, I think doubt can leak in or set in. I think those are probably the couple that come to mind in terms of circumstances. Are there any I'm missing?
I mean, I'm sure there's a million out there, you know, but as we said earlier, we personally have experienced doubt and uncertainty as followers of Jesus. And so, I mean, you can think about your own reasons.
Sure.
And my own reasons.
Right.
So, I mean, for me, I think I can resonate with a lot of that. I think since I became a follower of Jesus, I have experienced very little tragedy, truly. I mean, I have experienced a lot of very difficult things, but I would say so far in my life, I have been really lucky or blessed. But I have experienced doubt in a lot of the traditional ways, like, you know, going to college and being away from the community that I'm used to, my friends, you know, people I looked up to in the church, being disconnected from church in college and experiencing like, wait, is this actually something that is from like my own brain, or am I just like soaking in whatever right. environment I'm in? So experiencing that was definitely something that I struggled with for a few years during my college years. And then of course, when you witness things happening to good people mm-hmm. that don't deserve it, I think that is definitely something I've experienced in doubt settling in those moments.
Yeah.
Do you have the same experience?
You know, most of my doubts came when I was younger. Mm. You know, the older I've gotten, the more resolve has kind of set in with my faith. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't want to say that other families' tragedies that I've sat through with them has been a source of strength for my faith. Not that it needed those tragedies, but just the fact that I was there and among people during those tragedies, mm-hmm. I think has strengthened my faith, more than anything. When I look back when I was younger, the doubts that I had came from, divorce in my family, came from uncertainty of growing up, came from, you know, sitting on a front porch waiting for my mom to come pick me up on the weekends and her never showing up. And then I would attach that disappointment that I have or had in people, and I would attach it to God. Mm-hmm. You know, so those were where my doubts really started showing up. When I was much younger, but the longer I've been in faith and honestly, the more tragedy that I've experienced as a pastor with families, the more my faith strengthens because I see and I watch, you know, when you watch a wife who's lost her husband for no good reason claim the name of Jesus and worship him, that doesn't send your faith in the opposite direction. It just strengthens it. Mm. When you sit with someone who has terminal cancer and they tell you that they are grateful for the challenges that God allows them to go through in their cancer battle, and that they desire to leverage their struggles for other people's good, that doesn't create more doubt in your mind. It only strengthens your faith.
So to me, it's almost as if based on how you and I and the rest of us observe faith and doubt coexisting, it's almost as if like you need one. You need doubt there in order to have faith, almost. It's almost like they feed off of each other in a way that, or they balance each other out in a way that can strengthen faith. So, I mean, when there's a lack of faith, there's more doubt. And when there's more faith, there's less doubt.
No, I think you're onto something. It's just like, how do you know what good is unless you understand what bad is?
Right. No goodness without badness.
Right. So, yeah, I would agree with you. And I think that when we think about can doubt and faith coexist, it's not can they, it's they must coexist, because what we also know is a very biblical principle is that faith grows. Mm. And if faith is growing, that means that doubt is shrinking, you know, so there is some coexistence there. And the stronger our faith gets, And the larger our faith gets, you know, the smaller those doubts and the tinier those whispers of doubts are in our world and in our lives. I think it's a really, really great way to put it.
Yeah, I'm glad you explained, because when you first said, you know, as I've lived out life and in life as a pastor, and you get to be an intricate part of people's lives as they experience things that would cause so much doubt and breed doubt, and instead you're witnessing in yourself and others an increase in faith. I was kind of questioning you a little bit, thinking like, you know, how can you watch somebody go through these things and then think to yourself, like, you know, this makes me more certain about my God, you know? But then putting it in the perspective of, in those moments, people have choice and they have options. How are they going to view what has happened to them? How are they going to view what is happening to their loved ones? Or, you know, when something that they thought was true is tested, like, how are they going to view it now? And watching somebody go through that logical process and emotional process and come to the conclusion, no, actually, faith is what I choose. Faith is what makes sense to me out of the two, out of faith and doubt. Faith is what makes sense to me. That explanation makes it a whole lot easier to imagine faith and doubt coexisting.
Sure.
So with that being said, that there is a place for doubt and faith in the same breath, in the same person, in the same experience. How would you suggest somebody who's experiencing doubt and they live a life of faith, they believe who Jesus is, they are a follower of Jesus, how would you guide them? How would you suggest they address that?
Yeah, I think for this, we want to go to a biblical example.
Okay.
And probably the greatest biblical example we have is a guy named Thomas. Thomas was a really good friend of Jesus, spent a lot of time in and around Jesus, was one of the kind of inner circle that Jesus created of about a dozen guys, and just listened to Jesus and learned from Jesus and followed Jesus around, and, you know, just a big part of the ministry of Jesus. And after Jesus was put to death on the cross and resurrected, Jesus had appeared to some of his followers, and they told Thomas about it, and Thomas just couldn't believe it. You know, he was like, I just don't believe it. I don't get it. And so much so that in church circles today, he even has a nickname of Doubting Thomas.
Really?
Really?
I've never heard that.
You serious?
That serious?
How about that? So Thomas was told, or Thomas said, hey, here's the deal. I'm not going to believe what y'all are saying about Jesus until I actually put my fingers in the holes in his wrist and I see the wound in his side. Like, right, until that happens, there's nothing you can say that's going to convince me that Jesus resurrected from the dead. Well, just so happens, we fast forward just a little bit and Jesus finds himself right in front of Thomas. And sure enough, Jesus is like, here you go.
Here's your chance.
And
Doubting Thomas.
That's right. Doubting Thomas. And he does. And so I think the thing I want to encourage everyone is it's okay to be Thomas. As long as you're willing to do what Thomas did, and that is to discover. So I think if someone wants to say, hey, okay, if I've got some doubts, what's the one thing I need to take from this? Is you need to set in your own mind what are the things you need to discover. For Thomas, it was, okay, so you said you saw a physically resurrected Jesus. And their response was, yes, Thomas. And he was like, okay, well, I'm not going to believe you until I discover the same thing for myself. And I actually want to touch where the nails went in his wrist, right? So you need to do the same thing.
Okay.
Wherever your doubts are, you need to identify, this is why I doubt. This is what I need to erase that doubt.
So basically, it's one thing to just say for Thomas to be like, all right, guys, y'all are crazy. Like, that didn't happen. There's no way.
Right.
And leave it at that. But instead, he was like, you guys are crazy. There's no way. In fact, the only way I'm going to believe it, if this is what I see and experience. So like he identified like the only way for my doubt to be eliminated is if this is what needs to happen for me. This is what I need to experience.
Right. I think it's important. Here's the distinction is, for one, doubt can set in and doubt can deceive us. And that's what we don't want to allow to happen.
Right.
We want doubt to send us into discovery mode of, I want to cure my doubt, because here's the thing. Let's just take Thomas, for example. Thomas has all of his best friends who now say they've seen resurrected Jesus. And so he's like, I don't believe you. I'm doubting that Jesus has resurrected. But at the same time, there's still something in his head that says, why would all these guys lie to me? Like, I don't believe them, but why would they lie to me about this? And so now he's got doubt in whether he can trust his friends. And he's also doubting himself, like, why would I not trust my friends? So he's got doubt on both sides. Now, he could just get overwhelmed by that and just say, okay, that's it. I'm running away. And he could have left Jerusalem. He could have just said, I don't want anything to do with this. I don't want nothing with your nonsense. Jesus is gone. That's it. I'm gone. But instead, he was like, you know what? No, I need to discover, because I need to put some doubt to rest. I don't want to live and dwell in doubt. I want to get rid of, I want to be certain. I want to be confident in what I'm thinking. And so this is what I need. Now, here's the truth. Just because that's what Thomas said he needed doesn't mean that's actually what he needs. It just means that he's going to go discover until he finds proof that equals that in his brain. Now, the truth is, if Jesus, honestly, it's probably enough. If Jesus walks in the room and he sits down and has some dinner with him and they talk for 3 hours, but Jesus says, hey, here's the deal. You can't actually touch my hands. I think Thomas probably still believes, right? Even if Jesus is like, no,
oh, yeah.
You can't stick your finger in my nail hole. Yeah. like if that's what he says, I think Thomas still believes. So even though Thomas said, hey, this is my standard to get my confidence back, you never know what you're going to find
right.
in that discovery process. The important part is let doubt lead to discovery, whether it's discovery that gives you the confidence that, hey, it's not even doubt anymore. I am sure Jesus did not resurrect from the dead. You owe that to yourself. Or it's, no, I've discovered he did. I want confidence in either one. Right. I don't want like doubt on both sides. I doubt they would lie to me, but I also doubt what they say is true. And because this is just too complicated, I'm just going to run away from it and just let the doubt just kind of live there. You don't want to make decisions in doubt. You want to make decisions in confidence. So discover what you need to discover to get rid of doubt on either side, whether it's I can't believe what they said, or I can't believe that they would lie to me in the first place. Like, you see what I'm saying? Doubt exists on both sides.
Right.
Don't let that happen.
My thing is, okay, so there's a angel and a devil on my shoulder.
Okay.
And I got faith and doubt over here.
Yeah.
So
what does your devil sound like?
Probably a little like Gollum.
Gollum.
Yeah.
Give me an example.
My precious.
Okay. What does your angel sound like? Like me.
Clay Aiken.
Okay. Clay Aiken.
No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. Probably. I think an angel probably sounds like a woman.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway, so there's my little devil and my little angel. And What if, so you're saying like in every situation, there's got to be the presence of both. Like, what if you came to, I trust you, Clint. Okay. Like you are, I would call you if I was in prison or jail, probably jail, because in prison, anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you're my phone call and you tell me, Marky, I need you to look out the window. There's pigs flying over Noonan, Georgia. Like,
there's pigs flying. Excuse me.
There's pigs flying in Noonan, Georgia.
Yeah.
I would just laugh. Like, in that scenario, like, right. Like, there's really no one there saying, yeah, believe him. Like, there's no angel woman saying, believe him. But there is Gollum saying, absolutely not. There's like, so I don't know, like, work with me here, because to me, it sounds like you're saying that when it comes to, I guess, really the important things, there's always the presence of both.
Yeah. I mean, I guess pigs flying is an interesting example.
Sorry.
It's okay. Yeah. I don't know if things, you know, I say crazy things like that might not be the best example, though a resurrected from the dead Jesus is tantamount to pigs flying. Though Jesus did tell them he would do that. So maybe not. And Jesus had resurrected a guy named Lazarus not too long before this. So they already knew he could do this. So I actually don't think it would be tantamount to pigs flying. Yeah, I think the important word is discover at the end of the day.
Yeah.
It's because the truth is that if you and I were on the phone together and like just in our actual real relationship, right? Yeah. Like it's real life. And I were to call you and say, hey, there's this crazy new pandemic. Pigs are learning to fly. Right. And I were to tell you, hey, I'm serious, Marky. This is it. I'm nervous for you and Luke. Stay in your house. Right. I do think that there's a part of you that would be like, why would he make that up? Like, that sounds like the dumbest thing, but why would he make that up?
Yeah. You know, I mean, when you put it like that, like, okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, so there's still some doubt. Like, hey, that seems absurd, but I just don't understand why. So there's doubt on both sides. Either way, I think the important reaction for you there is not to sit in doubt, but to sit in a mode of discovery to say, okay, well, I'm not just going to take it at face value. So, how do I discover what is true? Is Clint lying or is this absurd thing real? I don't think either one of those makes sense to me in my world. I don't think pigs can fly. I also don't think Clint would tell me and my husband for our own safety, don't come out of our house.
Right.
So I need to discover which one of those two things are right. And I think, again, discovery is the key. Sitting in doubt doesn't do anything but just deconstruct anything that is healthy. Mm-hmm. You know, like you just sit and just do nothing, or you run away. I think that's a lot of times what people want to do with faith is they get a question that's too hard to discover an answer for. And they just decide, I'm just going to quit on it. I'm just going to give up on it. And I don't think that's the best thing to do with doubt. Ask hard questions, ask difficult questions, ask follow-up questions, find a pastor who's willing to talk to you and say, hey, look, I need an answer to this question. And maybe the answer is, I don't have an answer.
Okay.
But find out that that's the answer.
Okay. You know? So we kind of drew that out a little bit, but just to summarize, so you're in a place where as a follower of Jesus, you are doubting, or maybe you're not a follower of Jesus and you have this kind of inkling of faith. Like you have this, you're drawn to faith. And you think to yourself, can these coexist? Well, if they can, then how do I minimize one and maximize the other? You know what I'm saying? So facilitate discovery.
Yes.
Is step number one. Mm-hmm. So what does that look like sometimes? Like, if we are trying to increase faith and decrease doubt, what are some other things we can be doing besides just thinking and asking questions to ourselves and trying to find the answers to them?
Yeah. So I would say one of the best ways is for you to find people who've experienced the same type of doubt that you have and have come out on the other side of faith. So, let's just say, you know, someone's listening, just got a diagnosis they weren't expecting, and that's causing them to have some doubt. Mm. So I would say, hey, I want you to enter into a place of discovery, and that discovery mode doesn't need to sink back into despair, but it should propel us forward to say, hey, I want to talk to someone who is 6 or 9 months ahead of me in this prognosis, that says their faith is stronger because of it. And I want to hear if my BS meter, you know, or my BS radar goes off when I'm talking to them. And I want to hear why is it that this didn't cause their doubt to turn to despair, but instead their doubt strengthened their faith. I think that's one of the practical things. So
having a mentor, kind of, or think, not even that, just like seeking testimony.
Yeah, I think, but not just any testimony that resonates with you.
Right.
You know, that's going through the things that's causing you doubt. Like, I think you need to find someone who's overcome that, because ultimately that's what doubt's going to be. It's going to be an obstacle, and it's either going to become a barrier that can't be overcome, or you're going to bust through it and it's not going to be a problem. There'll be debris in your past that lets you know that you can knock down whatever Satan puts up in front of you. Mm. And a lot of times you can do that if you find the blueprint for how to break the wall down, and someone else can give that to you, or at least share how they broke their own wall down. And I think what I've discovered about the community of faith is that there are tons and tons of people who have experienced things in their lives that should have been a catalyst for doubt and despair, but has turned into a catalyst for incredible faith. And they want to share it, because the byproduct of true, rigorous, selfless faith is sharing it. Mm. Like, it's the most natural thing, because they realize that faith is the one thing that honestly doesn't let them down. And when you realize that, and when you come to that reality, you want other people to experience the same thing, because they realize, man, I wouldn't be where I am without it. And then there's empathy that's shared, like a common empathy that goes back and forth in the shared experience that says, hey, I just want to give you the blueprint. I want to give you the map that I took to get to the prize, and in hopes that maybe my map can inspire your own. Not that your journey will be identical to mine, but there will be some similarities. And the hope is that the destination is the same, which is where we've taken doubt and allowed it to be a catalyst for discovery, and that discovery ultimately strengthen our faith.
Now, I definitely think that, you know, facilitating discovery can propel us to a step as large as seeking out testimony that you resonate with.
Sure.
But in my experience, thinking back to where I was when I was experiencing doubt when it was its largest in my life, I do not think, I am uncertain that I would be able to take a step that large. So when I think about in my experience, my steps were much smaller. And it could be as simple as on my toughest days, full of the most uncertainties, it was just praying, just thinking thoughts in God's direction. So can you think of other baby steps towards those larger steps that will actually facilitate, you know, the minimizing and maximizing?
Yeah. And I think prayer shows up in a myriad of ways. I think prayer shows up in our music. Prayer shows up in our silence and in our exercise. Prayer shows up in our out loud conversations with God. Prayer shows up in our deeper, quieter thoughts that just happen in the stillness and quietness of our brain. I think prayer in all of those areas are tiny steps that can begin discovery. I know that the Spirit of God works among and in the people of God, and that the doubt that exists is contrary to that Spirit. And that when we ask the Spirit of God to begin working on wrestling that doubt to the ground, that He doesn't ignore us, but He begins to activate in us and around us. And I think that prayer language, whichever language you choose, whether it's music or thoughts or out loud or the exercise, whatever it might be, nature or in a quiet room or in a dark closet, wherever you have those moments of time with God, that the Holy Spirit can do work of convicting and encouraging and equipping us for what's next, certainly. I will say, though, that prayer ought to always, most times, there's exceptions, prayer ought to most often lead to some action that says, hey, I'm praying for this, but I'm not here just for you to do the work. I'm here to do the work also. So I want to have time of prayer, but Spirit, God, would you lay on my heart what is some action I can take? And that could come from listening to the Holy Spirit. It also could come from reaching out to a big brother or big sister spiritually, or spiritual father or mother or a mentor, to say, hey, here's an area of doubt. I've been praying about it. I don't know what to do. Would you challenge me a little bit?
Yeah.
I think that's always healthy.
So we have seeking out other people who have experienced what you're experiencing.
Yep.
We have prayer.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people, pretty much everyone, has some type of community, a group of people. Mm-hmm. They have friends, they have family. So whether you're somebody who identifies as a Christian, as a follower of Jesus, or somebody who does not, like, you have people in your corner. So how would you say community and being around other people can facilitate this discovery of faith and doubt and, you know, which one you're leaning into?
Yeah. I mean, community controls so much, or not controls, but community influences so much of who we are. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is the gift and the burden of man that we are so communal. It's a burden because let's say you're the only believer in your community. And they've all just been waiting for this doubt to set in. And they use this doubt as a wedge and they just further drive the wedge between you and God. The very same thing could happen, though, in the opposite and the inverse,
mm-hmm.
where you're the only one with doubt, and they help you remove that wedge that's been put in there.
Right.
And so it's a gift and it's a burden. So it could go either way, right? It could pull you in either direction. As a follower of Jesus, the assumption is that you have a biblical Christian community in some form.
Right.
Also, the hope is that that's not your only community, mm-hmm. right? Like Christians who only hang out with Christians. There's the problem. So, but leaning into that community and having the opportunity to be vulnerable in that space, I think is crucial to any relationship.
Right.
Vulnerability is key. Having a safe place among believing friends to say, hey guys, I'm really struggling with my faith. I think one of the greatest strengths is we might not even know what we need to discover to get rid of this doubt. But when we're in a community, the community can say, hey, well, let's go do this together.
Right.
You know, I'll walk with you in your doubt. Where do we need to begin? And they might have some ideas for discovery that you never thought of.
Mm.
And that you never anticipated that, man, this would actually scratch that itch for me.
Yeah.
You know, this would actually help me understand and process this thing that's happened to me. You know, I think what we have to remember is that the Bible makes us a promise that Satan is here to steal and kill and destroy.
Mm.
And when we see the byproduct, we see that the byproduct of doubt destroys what faith there was. And so it makes sense that doubt would be one of the tools that the enemy uses, because it is a destroyer. And if he can destroy the greatest gift we have, which is faith, and then the rest of the things that we have in our life are easy. And so it makes sense that it would be something that people wrestle with and, you know, have difficulty day in and day out overcoming. But it also, the other great piece of it is that we know that, right? That we're aware that kill, steal, destroy, that's his MO. And so we want to make sure that if we do need to destroy a faith in Jesus, if we do need to kill that, well, we've got a brain that we can use to discover whether that makes sense to us or not. And I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, I've given my life to ministry at least the last almost 20 years, 18, 19 years. I don't want to waste my life believing in a myth.
Right.
So I want to know.
Right.
I want to know. So when doubts creep in, I search for answers.
So doubt is not from God. I mean, when I
think it depends on what doubt you got. I mean,
like uncertainty as a whole, is that something that you think God wants for us?
Well, I think it depends on what it is. You know, I think intuition and discernment, where we can doubt the legitimacy of something, I think it's a good thing.
But is that the same though?
I mean, doubt's doubt. It's a lack of confidence in something. It's someone saying, I can be trusted with this, that, and the other. And there's something inside of you that says, don't trust him with that.
Well, the scenario that comes to my mind when I'm thinking about, okay, well, where does doubt come from? Does God will it for us? Is that something that we should learn to use as a tool or accommodate at all in our lives? And then I got to thinking, well, where did we see doubt first? And then I think about the garden.
Sure.
And the first time we saw doubt was that little old devil.
That's right.
That little old serpent.
Yeah, he plants a little seed of doubt and says, ah, you're not going to die. You know, and Eve's right. like, okay. Huh. So, yeah, she begins to doubt what God promised. She was wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was wrong. He followed and he was wrong too. So they're both wrong. Yeah, that's a good question. I do still see, though, doubt as a good thing. I mean, we can also doubt bad things.
Right. You know,
so I think it can be a tool one way or the other. Because the truth is, I think we had hoped, and God had hoped, that she would listen to Satan and doubt him. Like, nah, bro, I doubt you're telling me the truth.
But is that the same?
It's a lack of confidence in what he's saying.
Or is it full confidence?
That's good. It's full confidence in what God said, which makes me have a lack of confidence in what you're saying.
Right. But it's not even like, because if the opposite were true, then there's no confidence in what serpent's saying. It's just full confidence in God.
At some point, one doubt had to be bigger than the other. Like, at first, serpent shows up. I doubt anything comes out your slithering mouth is going to be anything worth listening to. But the longer the slithering mouth talks, all of a sudden, he's like, hold on. Like, my doubt scale started switching on the other end. And I was like, hold on, now I'm down what God says. He ain't got a slithering mouth. He got like a mouth of gold. I don't know if it's like a grill of gold. You know what I'm saying?
God's got a grill, everybody.
Yeah. But he starts doubting what God said, even though I'm sure she started with doubting with this little.
Well, whether it's something that, I mean, you could think of it as, you know, you can't really use doubt in the opposite direction, because then that's just faith in God. So let's just say, you know, like you started to say, you know, you can doubt bad things, but doubting bad things is really just having faith in good.
Sure.
So when you think about the garden and, you know, Satan's first tool to deceive mankind was, you know, inserting a little doubt in there. You still feel the same way?
I think so. I think I still feel the same way. I think Adam and Eve didn't fully trust God, and that doubt set in enough. So much so that they needed to discover. And they discovered that they were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know? What we know, though, is that their discovery didn't alienate them from God.
Mm.
You know? Even that doubt and then pushing forward and saying, hey, I'm going to go ahead and take a bite from this tree of knowledge of good and evil. And I'm going to push forward. I'm going to do that. That discovery, even though it created consequences, that discovery actually, God still leveraged for good and allowed them just to still have a relationship with God, just a different relationship. And ultimately that ushers in Jesus years down the line. But I think we see discovery there. They just discovered the wrong thing.
Hmm.
And ultimately they discovered that he was telling the truth from the beginning. I think the preferential thing would have been just to believe from the beginning. Either way, they came to the same conclusion. God was telling the truth.
Right.
I'm not sure that's a bad thing.
No. So, especially with that example, we see doubt and faith coexisting. We see the discovery process we talked about. We see them communicating with God. And we see God, despite the presence of doubt, and the tools of Satan, the tools of the enemy being present, despite all of that, he still maintains relationship with mankind. And he still not only maintains relationship with mankind, he sees it through and saves mankind from themselves.
Gives us the option.
Right.
Sure.
So the presence of doubt doesn't take away the presence of the fact that there's faith there. So they can be together. And we can maximize faith with things like prayer and community and testimony. Now, I don't know about you, but it still feels a little confusing.
I think the important thing to remember is that doubt, if left unattended, destroys whatever it is. So if you want to say, can doubt and faith coexist? Yes, but eventually doubt kills faith. The only thing that stops that is discovery. And so if doubt exists, your first step is to discover. And if you don't do that, doubt's going to win. You might discover that doubt is right. It depends on what you're trying to discover, right? Mm-hmm. There's a truth out there. So you might discover that the doubt is right, and you had every right to doubt, whether it's doubt in a person or doubt in a system or doubt in a job or doubt in an education, whatever it is. But if we're talking about doubt in God and faith and Jesus, if you just let doubt sit and simmer, I think eventually it'll destroy your faith. What we want doubt to do is to be a catalyst for discovery, because you owe yourself an answer. You owe it to yourself. And if you're a parent, you owe it to your children for you to come to a well-informed conclusion on, is this doubt legitimate or not? So I would advise, don't let doubt sit unattended, because it's going to destroy whatever it's sitting unattended next to. Allow it to be a catalyst for discovery, because doubt deserves to be answered. I think that's probably the best thing. Doubt deserves to be answered. And whether you get answers in short form immediately because it's a simple discovery, or you got to go into a process of prayer and the Holy Spirit gives you the courage to take an action step, or whether you reach out to someone who's going through the same thing you are and you discover through their own experience how faith still exists in the midst of this doubt that's been created because of shared experience or diagnosis, whatever that is. Either way, discovery is the key.
Okay. Well, you heard it here first, folks. God has grills. And
yeah. Gold mouth.
Has gold grills. And no, I'm just kidding. But I think that that does clear up the question a little bit of can faith and doubt coexist? Now, if you still have questions or comments, you can text us at 678-661-6330. You can text podcast.
Yeah.
And then you'll get a little text prompt, and then you can send us your little comments or questions.
Yep.
But we really do appreciate you guys listening and being a part of these conversations and these thoughts. And we hope that this facilitates more thoughts in your own head and maybe conversations with your village or your friends, your community, your whatever.
Yeah, go discover something.
Yeah, we hope that facilitates discovery. So thanks again for listening, and we'll see you guys next time.
Deuces.